among some today, for some today. Shimati Bhaktiram Dishamani Tilamani. Namaste, Saraswati Devi, Guru Mani Pichayani, Yuvase, Sasani Avadi, Tiskatsi Devi, Tarani. Om Adhatana Vasya, Devan Dipan Sadakaya, Chaksu Sumbatan Vena, Tasma, Sri Vida Venama, Sri Paitama Vista, Satyam Vena Vikale, Sayam Vipakana Mayam, Vadati Sarapundantikam. Welcome back from the capital of Southern Australia. South Australia or Southern Australia?
South Australia.
The land of good and plenty. Well, plenty anyway.
Plenty of what? Produce.
Plenty of what?
Plenty of produce, like some kind of vegetables.
Oh, really? What kind of vegetables?
Type of produce.
Oh, really? How nice. Spoken like a cook.
That area moves your mark. A lot of sunshine, very nice grapes and tomatoes.
This time of year, no?
Not this time of year, but summer, a lot of nice zucchinis, eggplants, and vegetables and fruits.
So the other time of Sunday, get good vegetables?
Yeah, pretty good.
Nice. Do you want to cook for them when you're there?
No.
No.
I repeat some of the information I've heard from classes from you there. Yeah. Classes. Different program.
This is important, verse. So, Akura is going to Vrindavan, and he's on the mission of whom?
Kamsa.
Kamsa. So Kamsa's mission, he knows that Krishna will understand his heart as a devotee, and he understands also that Krishna will go to Mathura and kill Kamsa. And not enact the plan of Kamsa, which was to kill Krishna. So he's showing, amongst other things, so much devotion as he's journeying to Vrindavan to see Krishna, and just thinking about Krishna, thinking about Krishna, thinking about Krishna. And we're watching his mind go through different states of his thinking about Krishna. And the final state was he's envisioning how Krishna's going to meet him. And he's going to place himself at Krishna's lotus feet. And Krishna will touch him on his head with his hand, that same hand that gives all benedictions. And then, do you remember what happens next? That he's thinking what Krishna will say. My dear uncle. Just show affection of him. And then he's thinking that Krishna's going to embrace him while understanding his heart. And then he remembers, or he's thinking about what will happen when Balaram sees him. And he sees Balaram. And Balaram, because he's going to keep his hands like this in front of Krishna, because his mood is Shuddha Nasya Prem. He has pure love as a servant of Krishna. So he's going to keep his hands folded in front of him, with his head down, not looking at Krishna. He's waiting for Krishna's command and order, and then Balaram will take him by his hand and treat him with deep respect, because he's quite senior to these young boys, actually. And then he's thinking that Lord Krishna's elder brother, Agrajo, elder brother, Agraja means born first. That's the name of Agra, means first, and Ja means born. So furthermore, Kimcha, Agraja, furthermore, or thus, Agraja, Krishna's elder brother, Ma Avannatam, who is standing with his head bowed, Yada Uttama, more or less the same. The most exalted of the Yadus, that's the name of Balaram, Smayan, he was smiling, Krishvaya, he'll embrace me, Vihitam, taking hold, Anjalo, by my joint palms, and then he will bring me into his house, receiving me with Satkritam, signs of respect, and then he will inquire how Kamsa has been treating the other members of the Yadu dynasty, his family members, because of Kuru is a Yadu, Balaram is a Yadu, the son of Rohini, one of the wives of Vasudev. So he's been thinking like this, ecstatically thinking like this, just his mind absorbed in thoughts of Krishna with great love and affection. Reverence, but with great love and affection. So, Sukadeva Goswami said, Iti san chintayan krishnam svafalka tanayo dvani latina gokulam prapta. So the cart, as san chintayan, as he was thinking in this way, thus thinking deeply about Krishna, Krishnam, Akura, the son of Svafalka, Dhani, on the road by his chariot. And then Gokulam, Dapta. Dapta means what? There's Dapti Siddhi, where you can attain anything. So he attained. But Gokulam, Praptam, Surya, Cha, Astagirim, Vipa. Astagirim means the mountain, the Giri, the mountain behind which the sun sets, just as the sun was going down. Gokulam Prapta. He attained Gokul. Akura driving in his chariot reached Gokul just as the sun was going down, beginning to set. As he was meditating deeply, Sanchintayan, upon Krishna, Krishnam. So this is the way to actually go to Vrindavan, deep meditation. And look what he's doing. One could say he's imagining. He's thinking this is going to happen, and then this is going to happen when I see Krishna. But his mind is fully absorbed. This absorption in Krishna is what Krishna consciousness means, actually. So somehow or another, have our consciousness, our minds absorbed in thoughts about Krishna. And of course that absorption in Krishna should be anukulena Krishna, not pratikulena. It shouldn't be in an adverse way, as Krishna, thinking of Krishna as an adversary, as Kamsa, his mind was absorbed in thinking of Krishna, but that is not considered devotion, because his mind was thinking of Krishna, and that is in nothing but being his enemy. So Srila Srila Swami comments, although Akura did not even notice the road, being deeply absorbed in meditation on Krishna, he still reached Gokul on his chariot. Let's see if Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments on this verse, text 24. Aquarius saw Krishna's footprints. Whoops, that's the next verse. No comment. Now, next verse. So Aquarius was speaking in this way, the sun is setting. And then Padani, Asya Kila Lokapala. He saw Padani, the footprints. Tasya Kila of he, Tasya. Akila, all Lokapalana. The protector or the superintendent. He saw the footprint of he who was the superintendent or the protector of all the planets. So his mood was very much this is Dasyabhav, the mood of servitorship. And he was seeing Krishna in this way. He is the protector of all planets. Very different from, again, as we've been mentioning, how the Vrishvasi see Krishna and meditate on him. As we heard Prabhupada say yesterday in that little segment where we heard some of his lectures, he said that the Vrishvasis, they're just village people. They have no knowledge, practically speaking. They don't even know who Krishna is. They don't know that he's God. They don't know of his potencies. They don't know him as Akila Lokapala, the superintendent of the universe. All they know is that they're attracted to him and attached to him. So what is dominant in their consciousness is their attraction and love for Krishna. And then Prabhupada said that this is the purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement. This is bhakti. Whether we have knowledge, whether we don't have knowledge, just to somehow or another become attached to Krishna.
Can I ask a question on that point? Because sometimes they say, you know, Mama Chandrani killed Vali when he wasn't looking, and he was Vamadeva and he stole.
You mean the Vrajagopis?
Vrajagopis, they say he's Vamadeva and he killed. He took everything from Vali Maharaj, he was offering him charity.
You know when they say that? They say that in the 47th chapter, when they're gopis.
Huh?
I know this one. See, but when Uddhava brings the message from Krishna to the gopis, so they say, you're telling us about Krishna, we know about Krishna. In his previous life, he was Lord Ramachandra. In his previous life, he was, you know, and he killed Bali in an improper way in that way. Vamanadevi, he cheated Bali. So what this means is they have knowledge, but it comes to the surface now and then. Like Yashoda Maya saw Krishna and she looked in his mouth and saw the universes, and the knowledge of something of who he was came to his consciousness now and then. And her Vatsalya Prem, her love for Krishna in the mood of a mother, was so powerful that it sent that knowledge to the bottom of the pot, so to speak. It overpowered. So they do know it, and the specific characteristic of the Vrajagopis gopis and the residents of Vrindavan is that, different from Vasudeva Devaki, who when they saw Krishna was Narayan, they didn't have an active friend. Remember we read that part? Were you here then? When Krishna killed Kamsa, he immediately went to Vasudeva and Devaki, and he freed them from prison, and then he offered his obeisances to the Lord's feet, acting as a child, and they became completely bewildered. On one hand, because he was their son, they wanted to embrace him. And on the other hand, he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and they wanted to offer him their obeisances. He was paying obeisances to them. So he got completely bewildered of which to do. And they just stood there stunned until Yogamaya called them, and then they treated him like a son. So they do have knowledge, in fact, but that knowledge isn't dominant in their consciousness because of the overpoweringness of their love. So Prabhupada was making the point that the real point of Krishna consciousness is not knowledge, knowing Krishna, but it is loving Krishna. So that's the basic point. Becoming attached to Krishna. Consciousness really should become attached to Krishna. And there's the verse from what is it, yena? We spoke of that yesterday. Karena, manas. You know that one from Bhakti Samhita Sindhu Nectar Devotion? From Rupa Goswami. Yena, tena, prakarena, manas, something. So that the purpose of everything is so that the mind, sarva vidina seva cha itya eva kinkara.
So you sort of never get overwhelmed by the knowledge the way
Vasudeva. So that's considered the difference between the quality of the love. Or another example of Arjuna, when he saw the universal form, he was overwhelmed and he started apologizing to Krishna for treating him in a familiar way. The residents of Vrindavan, cowards, they walked some way around it. Nabhimad said, oh, the cowherd men say, oh, it's because you're such a great devotee of Lord Narayan, Nanda Maharaj, that your son is always protected by Lord Narayan and is never defeated. So they said, no. And even when the cowherd men, after Nanda Maharaj tells them what happened in Varuna Loka to Krishna, after Krishna left Skopanam Hill, they said to him, your son, previously we thought he was one thing, but now we understand, after watching him lift over on hill, and after watching him, after hearing what you said about how Indra treated him with such deference, we think he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then, as if they were ordinary people, they're saying, since we have such a relationship with him, what's going to happen to us at the time after we leave this world, after death? So then Krishna took them and put them in the Brahmananda. And he gave them Brahman, a taste of Brahman, and quickly he pulled them out of it. They didn't like it because they didn't have a relationship with Krishna. Then he brought them to Gokul, Vaikuntha, and they saw Krishna with all the demigods surrounding him, offering him prayers, and they felt that Krishna at that time wanted to come and run onto their laps and jump on their laps as children do with people they love and trust. And they wanted spontaneously to pull Krishna onto their laps. It's just spontaneous affection for him. And they saw that Krishna was longing to run to them, but due to the presence of the demigods, he couldn't act. So then Krishna brought them back to good old home of Vrindavan, with Vrindavan, and they understood this is the best place for us because there we can act with Krishna just in a spontaneous, loving way. So they also saw Krishna being prayed to by the demigods. It didn't diminish their love for him at all. Rather, they were thinking, how will Mother Yasoda tolerate? This is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment. How will Mother Yasoda tolerate not being able to feed him anytime she wants if she's watching this kind of a scene? She won't be able to tolerate it. Of the demigods praying. Sometimes the cowherd boys watch the demigods pray to Krishna. And they're thinking, you know, in a, explaining in the, you know, common way, they think, boy, how long is this going to take, you know, before we can go and play? So they're watching this happen. They're watching Indra and the cowherd and the demigods shake for Krishna. And then after, they all tease Krishna. And imitating all the, you know, the way that the funny demigods are singing there, the chamaras and everything. So they're watching this, but nothing affects the quality of their love for him. They may have knowledge, but it's so covered in their consciousness by their love. Like, you know, the typical example is if some extremely wealthy person comes in here and then will naturally be thinking of this is a really wealthy person. I should smile at him, I should give him a nice seat, and everything in my consciousness was beyond his power. Which means, practically speaking, that I don't have much of a depth to the relationship that I have with him. But on the other hand, someone who, you know, his school friends and everything, or his mother, or his children, they may sometimes think, oh, you know, my son's got $50 billion, but the mother's just going to worry about if he's getting enough to eat, if he's taking care of it, you know, if he's taking care of his health and things like that. You know, that the depth of the affection of the relationship covers over the knowledge of the opulence of the position. So sometimes she may be reminded of it. But if she really loves him, that's pushed aside by her motherly affection. So that's. So then, as a crew arrived, in the cowherd past, Vadani to Sikila Lokapala, Kajitajusta Malapada Renu, he saw that person, the footprints in the soft dust of Vrindavan, of that person who the great controllers of the universe, the Lokapalas, or they hold that dust on their heads, he says. In the cowherd pastures of Kuru saw the footprints of those feet whose pure dust the rulers of all the cowherd planets in the universe hold on their crowns. They saw that the footprints. Those footprints of the Lord, distinguished by such marks as the lotus, the barley corn, the elephant goad, made the ground look wonderfully beautiful. So he saw those footprints, which were clearly different from anyone else's footprints because of the specific markings of the Lord. Does anyone know some of the other markings that are on the footprints?
Flag.
Umbrella, barley corn, it says here. Lotus, elephant corn. There's lightning, I think, is it? Yeah? I don't know. It's written, but I can't remember where it's written. But it's wonderful.
Some conversations look good.
So the ground became beautified by the footprints of Krishna. So what is so finally he's there and he sees the footprints of Krishna. So increasingly agitated by ecstasy at seeing the Lord's footprints, his bodily hair standing on end because of his pure love, and his eyes filled with tears. So this is the product of his mental cultivation of Krishna consciousness on the way going, the anticipation. Because he's ready for it now, because he's been thinking deeply. And then a crow jumped down from his chariot. And he began rolling about among those footprints, exclaiming, "Ah, this is the dust from my master's feet." With these words, he was saying, rolling about, "Prabhu Amuni Angri Rajamsi." This is the dust, the particles of dust. Raja Amsa Angri from the feet. These, Prabhu of my master. And saying that, "Oh, these are the dust of the feet." So what consciousness he had. And there he was, an elderly man. He was a minister of Kamsa, which meant the minister of the king, regardless of Kamsa as Kamsa. And he was a noble, a yadu. And look what he was doing, rolling around and dirt dust. in ecstasy, actually. Look at them, and look at the symptoms that were manifesting in his body. But just because of seeing blood footprints, he hadn't even seen Krishna yet, or Balaram, he just saw the Lord's footprints. His bloody hair stood on end. His eyes filled with tears, and spontaneously jumped down from his chariot and rolled about amongst those footprints, exclaiming, "Ah, this is the dust from the master's feet." In this way, the Samasvabhalka meditated on Sri Krishna on his journey from Mathura. He reached Vrindavan by the end of the day. Akura passed the whole journey without knowing how long it took because of his thinking. When he reached Vrindavan, the sun was setting, and as soon as he entered the boundary of Vrindavan, he saw the hoofprints of the cows and Lord Krishna's footprints. Impressed with the signs of his souls, the flag, the trident, thunderbolt, and lotus flower. These symbols on the soles of the Lord's transcendental lotus feet are worshipped by all the demigods. That was the Lokapala. And the other great personalities throughout the three worlds. And upon seeing the footprints of Krishna, Kura immediately jumped down from the chariot out of respect. He became overwhelmed with all the symptoms of ecstasy. He wept, and his body trembled. Out of extreme jubilation, upon seeing the dust touched by the lotus feet of Krishna, Akura fell flat on his face and began to roll on the ground. So, and Akura is not on the level of the gopis. He's not on the level of the Nanda Yasoda. He's not on the level of the friends. He's not on the level of the servants. He's not on the level of the grass and trees of Vrindavan and the deer. He's a Mathura devotee, Mathura Vasi. And he has love for Krishna in a completely different mood. That's not on these really high levels, we could say. Not on a really, but just look at what level he is on. And then consider what level, what's my life, and what my devotion, my so-called devotion is like. He's thinking about Krishna, and who am I thinking about all day long? And what to speak of, what am I thinking about all day long? So he was, just by seeing, this is called udipan, stimulation, the footprints of Krishna, and consider the stimulation for ecstatic love. And Akura is the example of that. So Prabhupada says, Akura's journey to Vrindavan is exemplary. One who intends to visit Vrindavan should follow the ideal footsteps of Akura, and also think, and always think of the pastimes and activities of the Lord. As soon as one reaches the boundary of Vrindavan, he should immediately smear the dust of Vrindavan all over his body without thinking of his material position and prestige. So the Lord Tamadas Thakur has sung in a celebrated song, Visha Charya Kade Sudhaveman. When my mind will be purified after leaving the contamination of material sense enjoyment, then I shall be able to visit Vrindavan. Actually, one cannot go to Vrindavan by purchasing a ticket. The process of going to Vrindavan is shown by Akura. So what does that mean?
He's buying a plane ticket to Vrindavan, somebody to get into the real Vrindavan.
Yeah, that's what it means.
Wait to the consciousness.
Yeah. So we get... Hare Krishna,
come to go.
Come to go. Not tonight, though.
Yes, it's the end of the night.
Tonight?
Yeah. Morning, Andy.
When?
Oh, at 4 o'clock.
Tomorrow, 4 o'clock a.m.?
Yeah, yeah.
You'll leave here or your flight is then?
No, flight is 6:30, 6:48. But I have to leave here at 4.
So early?
Yeah, so it is. Flight time is like that. 2 hours before, something like that.
So we say that someone is coming, someone is going. A cura was, we were just reading about a cura. A cura is coming.
Yeah, and Krishna will be going.
Bhakti Bihari will also be going. But you are going towards that place. You'll be so close to Vrindavan.
Yes, that's right.
But one cannot purchase a ticket. We just went through a procedure.
No.
One cannot purchase a ticket to Vrindavan. The process of going to Vrindavan is shown by a crew.
Yeah.
But it's even difficult to purchase a ticket to Yamuna Naga.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to miss your happy face.
I miss all of you, and also the Gopina here, you know. You miss one, I miss everyone.
So all the concentrated missing will be on you. Yours will be on your places.
And all the shopkeepers in there, Hay Street and Murray Street.
Of course, yeah, they're very friendly to us, you know.
With the old one, they notice.
Yeah.
Well, now I know.
Yeah. It steals
the
show.
Yeah.
He's been doing that for so many years.
Some of their shops, when they hear our bell and Vardanga, their antennas rise up and they are listening to it. And some of them, very happily, some, you know, all sorts of gesticulations, you know, happiness, sharing happiness.
Well, that's so nice. Just read that Akura, as soon as he saw the footprints of Krishna in the dust of Vrindavan, his bodily hairs stood on end because of pure love, and his eyes filled with tears. He jumped down from his chariot and began rolling about amongst those footprints, exclaiming, "Ah, this is the dust for my master's feet." So what? Wonderful. And the next verse, let's see if there's a comment there. No. Little comment. Seeing Krishna's footprints, the crow's eyes flooded with teardrops. So not only was crying, but it's such a nice a flood. Not one little tear forming here and gently dropping down, but there was a flood of tears. And he jumped from the chariot, rolling in the dust of those footprints while weeping. With a choked voice, Akura said, "What fortune to obtain such rare things?" So the next verse is quite famous. I can't remember where I've seen it recently, but it's actually quite a wonderful and important verse that's also very instructive. Deham deham vittam yanato ittudam bambiyam sucham sandhyo hirlinga darshana savana divi. Deham vittya, of the embodied beings. Yana artha, this is the goal of life. Chitva dambam dhyam sutram. Giving up dhamma. What does dhamma mean?
Dhamma is pride.
Pride. Bhyam? Bhyam?
Bhyam.
Bhyam. Fear. Giving up pride and fear and sutram. Sorrow. Sandeshat. Beginning from his being ordered by Kamsa. So the very goal of life for all embodied beings is this ecstasy, which Apura experienced when, upon receiving Kamsa's order, he put aside all pride, fear, and lamentation, and absorbed himself in seeing, hearing, and describing the things that reminded him of Lord Krishna. Isn't that wonderful? The very goal of life for all embodied beings is this ecstasy which Apura experienced upon receiving Kamsa's order. He put aside all pride, fear, and lamentation, and absorbed himself in seeing, hearing, and describing the things that reminded him of Lord Krishna. Mm. This is the very goal of life. Deham vrityamiyano to. For all embodied beings, this is what is to be gained. Hitradambam vyam sutram. Putting aside all fear, pride, etc. Sandhiksha jo hariyalinga darshana savanadibi. He just began to fully absorb, he accepted whatever fully absorbed himself in Krishna with full ecstasy. This is the goal. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that Akura gave up fear by openly showing his love and reverence for Krishna, even though he or his family might have been punished by the angry Kamsa. Akura gave up his pride in being an aristocratic member of society and worshipped the cowherd residents of the simple village of Vrindavan. And he gave up lamenting for his house, wife, and family, which were in danger for King Kamsa. Giving up all these things, he rolled in the dust of the lotus feet of God. Yeah, when one has the calling in the deepest way, nothing else is important. Like the Bhajagopis, when they heard the sound of Krishna's flute, a full fever of ecstatic love afflicted their minds, and they just didn't know anything. They just ran to Krishna. The cowherd, the Brahmana ladies who were staying in the village of Vatra, when the cowherd boys came to take some food for Krishna and Balaram from them. It's so funny the way it's described, is that when they came and begged from the Brahmins were performing the sacrifice, the Brahmins, they said, "We've come in the name of Krishna and Balaram, all of your food," and then they gave them some knowledge of the sacrifice. And the Brahmins didn't say anything. They didn't ignore them. They ignored them. And then they were so discouraged by that, they went back to Krishna. Krishna preached to them, gave them good Sankirtan advice, and told them, you know, when you're begging, you can't be attached to it. Some people will give, some people won't give. And then he sent them back. But they asked for the wives of the Brahmins, that their might be devotees will be different. So they went to the wives of the Brahmins, and they said, "We just want to tell you that nearby is Krishna and Balaram." And they began speaking about Krishna and Balaram. But as soon as the wives of the Brahmins heard the name of Krishna, they became stunned in ecstasy. And they couldn't speak or say anything. So the coward boy said, What's going on here? We talk to the Brahmins, and they completely ignore us. And then we talk to the wives of the Brahmins, and they don't answer us either. What's going on? But the wives of the Brahmins were completely different. Even though they didn't answer, they just put aside everything. They just packed up all the food, and they just brought all the food on plates for Krishna and Balaram, and they thought, you know, people were trying to stop them, but they were possessed. They gave up all fear, all pride. We're Brahmins, Krishna's a coward boy, sacrifice is going on. They gave up all fear. They didn't care. They were caught by full attraction to Krishna. So this is very wonderful. very wonderful and very rare. So Kura exhibited this as well, and described in this verse. Deham Vikrihan or Do Hikam Bham Vyam Sutam San Desham Yohriya Linga Darshana Savanadibi. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments. After describing the actions of Kura's body, words, and mind from the start of his journey in Mathura up to his entrance in Vraja, this verse presents the essential philosophical conclusion, which is an example for all. Kura gave up all false pride by bowling in Krishna's footprints. This is the goal of human life. Instantly, upon seeing Krishna's footprints, Kura rolled down in the dust at that very spot. Unless he gave up the pride, for dumbum, of thinking, I am a Kura, King Kamsa's minister. Since I'm so greatly honored by the king, how can I roll about in the dust at the feet of a mere coward boy? By openly showing his love and reverence for Krishna, Kura gave up his fear of punishment by Kamsa, who might be angrily complaining, even though Kura is my messenger, he's rolling about in the dust of the feet of my enemy Krishna. Kura gave up his sorrow of lamenting for his wife, children, and home, who might be destroyed by the angry Kamsa. Forsaking all these things, Kura rolled in the dust of Krishna's lotus feet. So quite extraordinary, and quite an attraction. So, in Krishna consciousness and spiritual life, there never should be any imitation. But yet, we should understand this is the real thing. Giving up all fear for him can also mean giving up fear of the criticism from friends. Giving up imitation for sucham can mean giving up the following considerations. We, being scholarly, aristocratic, and well to do, are superior to others. How can we fall down in the dust of the Vaishnava's feet, who are disrespected by society, who are poorly dressed and penniless? That seems to suit most of us. He also gave up the fear of being condemned by his own family, and the sorrow of being abandoned by them for falling down in the dust of the feet of a Vaishnava who was the representative of Lord Hari. Or else the phrase giving up pride, Dipradambam, applies to the conditioned souls in general and not to Akura, since he is overwhelmed in pure ecstatic love for Krishna. By hearing and remembering the glories of Hari that he had heard from Narada, Akura expressed an intense desire to serve Krishna in the loving mood of servitude, dasyaras. Similarly, a devotee should think, when will I serve Krishna in this way, and when will I get the good fortune to see my beloved Lord? This is good mood, yeah? Any questions or comments on this point, or any other things?
Yes, it happens. Not only that they took so much food themselves and went to the forest. And then Krishna said, all right, we go back. No, they said, no, we don't want to go back. We want to be with you here. And our husbands will not even accept us back now. I mean, they were so ready, you know, for this situation. And some or other Krishna assured them that your husbands will not be any problem. Then, with great difficulty, they went back.
And Krishna also, when they saw him, there's a description of how they saw him. He was standing just like Krishna and Balaram, like this. So Krishna had his elbow arm on his friend's shoulder, and with one hand he was twirling a lotus. That's just so, what's the right word?
Victor.
Oh, he's just so suave. Yeah, he's like so cool. He's just there, completely. And by the twirling of the lotus, he was indicating that in this way, seeing you, my heart is being twirled, moved around. Or he was saying, just as this lotus is twirling, I am going to twirl your heart. And then Krishna entered their heart through the glance. And then embraced them in their hearts. And then he said, now you can go home. And they said, but this one people were saying, but how can we go home? No one will accept us. We've come here for you. And he said, don't think that just by proximity to me, being physically close to me, you can be with me. You can be with me by deity worship. He preached to them in this way. And then they, somehow or another they went home. There's an entity at the door. Who is it?
How extraordinary is how much Guru put aside.
His what?
How much he put aside. There's a false describing the product. Because instructed, I mean, we all tend to have desperation to keep a focus on Krishna, but we let things take us away. There's an example that even in the circumstance where he's on a specific mission, which is quite contrary to sentiment, not distracted. It's quite amazing.
Not distracted from his
the aspiration, his love, his love. That's what's driving him. He can do the function, physical function as he's been instructed and required, but he's not doing it in the mentality of that we should be at the mission with externally demand.
Opposite. And that's one thing he's afraid of. How is this, my servant, the one I'm sending on a mission is like basically to get this person killed, is rolling in his foot dust. How is this possible? How am I going to tolerate this? Off with his head. And he doesn't care. He's just thinking it's Kamsa. Kamsa seemed to be, he seemed to have eyes and ears everywhere. One of those.
It's all very muddy.
Yes.
But he was graced too by Narad Muni, so Narad Muni was jealous about that. It's changed.
It's a little bit changed.
You can say Guru had courage to do that, but he was protected.
But it was interesting, it also says that the goal of life for a soul is to have this kind of ecstasy.
Mm.
So the ecstasy causes the symptoms.
Right.
So it's not that we can just
see
the symptoms and that will make us more advanced than we actually are.
Mm.
So
we have to take instruction and take it in the spirit.
We have to listen to what Narada Muni says.
Hmm.
Like we were hearing about Rukmini, she heard words from Narada and her heart became completely changed. And Krishna hearing words from Narada about Rukmini, the loving mind was born just by that. So like sarasanga, sarasanga. Lava matra sarasanga.
Mm.
If the heart is right, and the seeds planted in such a powerful way. How wonderful. This is the call, to be in that kind of consciousness, that just by being stimulated by the udipana, the stimulant for love for Krishna, the result is the kind of ecstasy that makes one forget everything else except one's beloved. And that type of attachment is the success of our existence.
Story about Kelsey went from Darwin one time.
Yeah,
and turned into a goat thing, hasn't it?
That one's that's what you call it, local command. The people say.
People say.
I've never read it anywhere. Maybe it's somewhere. I haven't read everything. But he got they threw him into a mud puddle. He's looking for Krishna. Sounds a little suspect because he wouldn't. Why would the king come alone? And he was afraid, so he never came. He was afraid of Krishna. But, and then the gopis, they took him and threw him in a mud puddle or something like that, and they made him work, making mud of cow dung patties and things like that, and sent him back.
He wasn't very good at that afternoon.
Yeah, he made it, cut jokes. Yeah, that's a famous Vrindavan story. But I don't know where it comes from exactly. I think they threw him in a mud puddle and they turned him back. In other words, they didn't care for who he was, what his power was insignificant compared to them. You can't even make mud, can't even make cow dung patties, what kind of.
The general rule is that comes was too scared to go to Vrindavan, so he sent everybody else. Yeah.
That's what
you say. Krishna too.
He wouldn't want to have him killed. He made his plan.
He thought Shiva and the student would do the job.
And Kuvalaya Pita, yeah, these, they were really powerful. They were like mountains. He obviously he hadn't grasped the full extent of Krishna's power. He also said that I've sent these lesser ones. Now I will call my main people, Kesi, Aristasura, like that, and then we have Chanura, Mastika, Kuvalaya Pita.
So Chanura and Mastika were more powerful than.
Perhaps he was their last hope, and of course he was so powerful too. So when it came to it, he drew his sword and was trying to kill Krishna himself. And Krishna just grabbed him by the hair, threw him down, and landed on him.
Then he could have just left Krishna in Vrindavan, but Krishna wasn't.
Well, you think that it was if he didn't try to kill Krishna and send all those people and put his mother and father in jail, there wouldn't have been any problem. And Krishna would. But he was a demon. He was a killer of the cows and Brahmins, too. He was the real thing, a demon. It's like telling a demon, why don't you just become a devotee and then you won't be a demon anymore, but he's a demon. So that's why.
But you can have you can be the king and have your sense go and just leave Krishna alone. Like.
Oracle working in his mind that you will be killed by him. So that was the main sort of fear. This was propelling him to take on this sort of action.
I was hearing it from Vrindavan Maharaj that he's saying that the the Kamsa was, he was a demon. He had taken his birth as Kalaneni previously, who had been killed by Krishna previously. And he had taken his birth as so many others had been. So there was like a conspiracy on the planet Earth by the Asuras to take over. And then when Pandu, who was such a powerful king, and he didn't come home from the forest, at that time, because he went out, he had done his service, he reestablished principles of religiosity, then he stayed out in the forest. And at that time, when Pandu was no longer acting as king, even though he still was officially the king, but he wasn't acting as the king, at that time, Kamsa saw his opportunity. And then he put his father in prison, and he made his move, and he took over, he started making his alliances with Jarasandha. He married all of Jarasandha's daughters, and he had his friends, and he was starting the Asuric alliance.
So he was more powerful than the Kurus.
Well, there was only Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana, who was also a demon at that time.
There was different
demons. Yeah, I think they were. Anyway, this is. He was powerful. And yeah, that's what they said. The demigods even were afraid of him. So he had a demonic mentality. He was born with a demonic mentality, and he came to fulfill that. You know, they want to be in control. They have their way of doing things. That's so why didn't he just leave Krishna alone? Because he was afraid of Krishna.
Yeah, the same question we asked about Rani Kashyapu, why didn't he just leave Prahlada alone?
His arrogance was, his pride was pinched by Prahlada's not listening to him. Not worshipping him. He couldn't tolerate it, because that's the demonic mentality, as the Bhagavad Gita describes. Dumba, that word dumba, and that pride. It's ruled by pride. So much wealth do I have today, I'll consolidate it further. This one is my enemy, Ishwaraham. I will enjoy. He is my enemy, I have killed him. And in this way I will consolidate, I will do this modern politics, same, demonic. A Surabhav. Imagine going to the Middle East right now and saying, why don't you just get along? Why don't you all just get along? What's the problem? Here we are sitting in prayer. What's the problem? Why don't they just make friends? You know, what's the problem? No problem. You vote for it.
It's like in some devotional community, you know, 16 devotees in a city of 3 million and they're fighting amongst each other.
In 16 different ways.
There's 16 different political camps and the 16 devotees in a city of 3 million people. It's material was so peculiar at times.
Yeah, so what's the cause of it?
A stage of quarrels.
Yeah, that really is, isn't it?
False ego, I guess. Yeah. We were supposed to be getting rid of as devotees, but sometimes you kind of wonder.
I guess it means that we're not really devotees of a very high caliber. Prabhupada, he said that if two devotees are fighting, it is both their faults, because both of them are not humble enough. In other words, a fight can't exist if there's no one to fight with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, the person, you realize, Okay. I'm fighting. Is that the rest? Yes. You should be doing this instead of what you're doing. Okay. No fulfill. There's that story of Srila Prabhupada's dear brother, Akinsana Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj, who while the Gaudiya Mats were fighting, tended to be fighting with each other. He would travel from one to the next living, one after another, and they'd say, what are they doing in that mat? You know, the one you just came from, and he'd say, well, they're planning this, and they're doing this, and they're doing this, and doing this, and doing this. Really? Okay. You'd go to the next month after some time and say, what are they doing in that month? What's their plan? Well, they're doing this and this and this and this and this and this and this. And then one of the leaders in one of the months, after watching this for a while, and said, you know, Maharaj, you just create politics. You just go from one to the other and talking about each other and saying what everyone's doing this. And this and that, and it causes so much trouble. Why do you know that? This is Maya. And he said, finally, you've realized my nature. Previously, when I would tell you how bad I was, you thought I was being humble. But you've actually now understood me. Okay. This is something wonderful. So tomorrow morning, so early.
Yeah. Yeah, right, you're not. Yeah, they're quite busy. You've got to get there 2 hours before they get through the whole...